This is To Catch a Con Man, Season 2, in the Victim's Voices. I will take you on another fascinating journey, but this time you will hear from other men and women that, like me, have fallen prey to the various cons, scams, and deceits by one of the most prolific and successful con artists to live and operate in the Midwest. You know him as Ricky Dugo.
Could $100,000 sustain my life? It couldn't even come close. So listen to me. If I was going to be in some sort of con, scam, conniving thing, it'd be for millions. It wouldn't be for $100,000.
To Catch a Con Man is brought to you by Studio 847 in Long Grove, Illinois. Listener discretion is advised, as some of this programming contains language and content that might be offensive to some listeners.
Join me on this adventure to catch a con man. This is Adam Albin. While not a victim of a scam, con, or fraud, REM reveals why, after such a bad experience dating Ricky Dugo, she continued to wonder what happened to him nearly 40 years later. Without regrets, she provides us with some answers that we have been looking for, and some of her theories around why she thinks he turned out to be such a bad apple. So what made you go out in 2020? Was it finding pictures? What made you go out and find information about him? What was so interesting about Ricky Dugo that 25 years later, actually, no, 35 years later, you're going out and you're still wondering what happened to the dude? What's so interesting about him?
Because he was probably, after all was said and done with him, he was the boyfriend that I said, don't date anything like this guy. And, I mean, for him to be my first boyfriend, and then, like, thinking, you know what, if I got that out of the way, I'm good.
Yeah.
Because every bit of who he was is not what I wanted in a boyfriend. I mean, I was not, I mean, my mom, I also listened to, like I said, the story of the girl from Vegas, and it's a lot of the story, like my mom definitely felt like something was not right with him, and didn't go into, like, doing any FBI investigating or anything like that, but definitely did not like him. But she told me after, you know, the more that I told him I didn't like him, the more you were going with him. I don't know if it was during school, my last year of school, senior year, I ran away from home and I lived over by there for, I don't know, like 2 weeks. And I'm like, that is not who I am. That was not who I was. You know, you're looking for your independence. You're looking for, you know, when you're that age, you're just like, you want to have your freedom. You want this and that. And I moved. I ran away. So, you know, there, being that he was my first, I know my story is not as familiar with most everybody in your stories that have been conned financially, but I was conned emotionally, physically, mentally, because he stole, and I don't mean this in a vulgar, weird way, but my innocence and my virginity. So, I mean, like, that is not the person that you want to be your first.
No, I don't. I'm finding this fascinating.
Well, I mean, it's fascinating. It's pretty sad. I'm past the point. I mean, I have a great life. If anything, and I do think that this, I'm going to speak for myself, but I almost feel anybody that has been conned or duped by him is that you learn a very big lesson, and you can't, I mean, there's a reason for the reasons why things happen. And I wouldn't say that I would ever give that up. I mean, I'm glad that he gave me that for me to figure certain things out in this life at a young age. Yeah. You know what I mean? I know that sounds kind of crazy. And I own that. And it's funny how, you know, I'm not saying, oh, poor me, because this happened. I mean, I allowed that to happen. Why did it happen? There's a reason why that happened.
Yeah, I don't. I don't pass judgment. I mean, I gave the guy money. I mean, you know, like willingly, yeah. Like gave him money, like which right. He stole. So you know, I don't pass any judgment at all.
And it's not that I want to cut you off. I'm sorry if I am cutting you off. It's like, you know, financially, you know, money is money. I mean, when it comes to money, that's how we survive. That's how we live. But when it comes down to an emotional, psychological, I mean, to give up, you can't get it back, like your virginity to somebody. You can't get that back. I mean, that is price. Like, you cannot put a price on that. You can't get that back. And, you know, when I was kind of like trying to see across the whole thing, you can't put a price on that. I mean, it could have made me felt like I gave up a lot of money, but it was on a different level, if that makes any sense.
For sure. It totally makes sense. Because you did give him something. Yeah, gave him something that to you was paramount. It was something that was special. Yeah, I totally get it. I mean,
yeah. And I guarantee you, there's like I said, there's probably 100 other girls that have that same story. And it's like, you know, I guess I'm fighting for, maybe it's not so much the financial part of how he got me, but on the part of somebody that can come in and manipulate somebody that is very vulnerable, somebody, especially maybe a woman who feels as though like this person is real and legit. And then you go to that extent, believing that somebody is that person to give that part of yourself up. You know, that's a different understanding and level that is somewhat parallel, but nothing close when it comes to financial. I mean,
I don't think there's absolutely no reason to compare. I think that there's definitely a loss here, you know, like something that is a loss. And let's go back into like tell me what it is that you lost. So you lost your virginity. So something that, you know, you held sacred to you, you know, you gave it to him. I mean, did he, and I'll ask this and this may be uncomfortable, but I'm not, and I'll tell you why this is, you know, like, but I mean, he didn't like force himself on you. I mean, you,
he didn't.
Right. So you allowed this to happen.
Yeah.
What is it that you saw in him back then? Or maybe, you know, I don't know if you'd know this, but like, what is it that would allow you to give something that's so sacred to you, out of all people, to him? Is that you? Did he give off this image that he loved you, like that you were the one? I mean, help me understand why you would do this.
I feel as though there was something, and I think you can probably agree, there's something about him that showed some sort of. Warmth that you wanted to trust him, I guess. I don't know. I think being that he was one of my first, he was different than anybody. Like, he was not from my high school. It was something that took me out of my normal routine of what I've only known. I put all my trust in the fact that, like, we were boyfriend and girlfriend. I mean, like, there was, like, no questions, no doubts. I mean, I just, like, we're boyfriend and girlfriend. So whatever he did to make me feel that secure, I don't know if it was... And again, I had nothing to compare it to because I didn't have any other boyfriends, or at least a healthy version of what a relationship should be like. I came from a divorced family. I mean, I didn't see, you know, my mom never remarried. I saw, you know, so I didn't have that. And maybe I was searching for it. He was, you know, maybe he saw that in and took advantage of it. I don't know. There's times that I felt that he was protective. Sometimes, you know, he was a bigger guy. I don't know if I felt like I was forced when the time happened, because we had been dating a little bit. I don't know. I mean, you can't really understand love is when you're that age. I mean, you know, still at 56 years old, you still question what is love. Definitely the thing that I got from him was that I had a very hard time trusting anybody after that. And unfortunately, that played into my whole life, but I don't know if that's a good thing or not to be guarded. You know, I mean, it's sad.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a do-go hangover. I mean, but we just all hope that eventually we all learn from it and you know, eventually, like for me, I hope to bury all of this someday. You know, this is definitely not my defining moment. I will not allow him to have my most defining moment.
Same here. Like I said, he hasn't really even come up. I saw him the one time at the Hawks game that shuddered me. And it was like, you know, and it was probably about 5 years after seven years after that is when, you know, I had gotten divorced. I was going through, you know, I was living in a place that I had to move out and go somewhere smaller. So I couldn't bring everything. I'm like, I don't even know why I still have this. Literally, it was like 3 days before I saw that whole thing that was Don't Be Scammed by Ricky Dugo that I'm like, I just threw everything out, like everything. But like I said, the pictures that one girl, Kim, had put up, three of those pictures in there were mine. And it's very interesting. I wonder where, I mean, how she got those pictures. He was bringing them to her. I mean, like, no doubt she probably was the one screaming on the phone while I was dating him. Like, who's over at your house? Who knows?
Yeah, it's like a rinse and repeat kind of thing. But, you know, I think what is so interesting is for such a bad experience, both of you guys hung on to some sort of memories of him for a long time, whether it was on purpose or not, you know?
It definitely was not because of love. I will definitely say that for a fact. It was more so for the fact that, like, I cannot believe that I was duped into thinking that this is what could have been something I thought was love. So I think that holds like a very kind of weird place in your psyche that like everyone you meet you kind of compare to, and you're like, no. So that thought of him never goes out of your mind, because you're kind of comparing, like, are you going to be the next person that's going to be that person? Like, I can't date that kind of a person. So I mean, you're always kind of on the edge of thinking, am I going to be conned? When I say conned, you know, lied to. He was definitely, without a doubt, a pathological liar, without a doubt. And I'm like, I'm looking for red flags every relationship I have. So
this is just advice, right? I mean, obviously, you're older in life. Hopefully, I mean, at this point, I mean, like, you know, you'll never meet another person like Dugo. I can guarantee it. There's nobody.
I think my nature, like, opens the aura up to narcissists, without a doubt. I know that. I know that is my path in life, and that's what I've needed to have to figure out. I'm, you know, as for right now, I'm good. I'm very educated with sociopathic narcissists. I mean, I am, and I have no regrets. I really don't. Like you said, it's buried. I think that just wanting to kind of see if the guy was like, what he was up to after knowing what I went through with him, just like on a, you know, psychological level when I dated him, I was just kind of questioning. I wonder what happened to him. And then that's when the can of worms opened. And I kind of followed through that with CBS Investigates. And again, I was like, I'm not getting involved. It wasn't until I heard your podcast that I felt like I needed to kind of come up and say something, just because I felt your honesty and I felt what you went through and what some of the other people went through. I'm like, you know what? If I have anything to add to your story, even if it's just one little thing, I wanted to be a part of that, just in support of you and whoever else that I listened to on the podcast. It wasn't until then. It wasn't even like scammed by with all the 50, you know, comments underneath it. I was still like, oh, thank God I'm like separated from that. It was when I heard your podcast.
So let's talk about that then. Let's say if you had the ability to say one thing to people out there, what would you say?
About him?
Yeah, just about, yeah, just like, it, yeah, about, so specifically about the experience, you know, because you just said, like, if there was, like, one thing that I could lend or add to the story, so I'm asking you, what would that be?
Well, I don't know if you're going to not like me for this, but to be honest, like, I feel very sorry for him. And I know that sounds very, like, maybe callous of stories that I've heard, but the thing is, how terrible of a childhood did he have in order to become this type of person? And in my heart, that makes me feel very sad for him. And, but not to disregard what he's done in the process, but you know what? It's like, it just makes me sad to think that there are people in this world that have become this type of a person because of the childhood that they've had.
So it doesn't make me mad at all. I find him to be, he's so multifaceted on so many levels. You know, I know how bad he is, what he's capable of. Do I feel empathetic to what he went through growing up? Or, yeah, I think that obviously, like, I feel sad for him today. I mean, even after all of this, because he doesn't feel like to be so disconnected, to not have any emotion in life. I mean, what is that? I just can't. I've said this on, you know, on my show. Like, I'm a Sagittarius. You know, I internalize until, like, I watch some commercial and then I bawl my eyes out for no reason. You know, like, I feel things, and I just can't imagine going through life having that ability not to. And I just can't understand, like you say, like, what happened so early on that makes him like this. But yeah, I do feel sad for him. I feel sad for him for a lot of reasons. Yeah. You know,
I do too. I feel as though, like, you know, just looking back from what I saw, and again, I couldn't really assess that situation at the time, but in hindsight, I do see a mother that was very hard. I saw a dad that was not in his life that maybe he yearned for and wanted to be like, whether it was a made up backstory or whatever. I feel as though if it's true that he was dyslexic and he didn't finish high school because of that, I'm sure he was ridiculed. I'm sure he was bullied back then. I mean, it all makes sense in the back end that, you know, here's this big guy, you know, a bigger than life guy because he was so skinny and he was so insignificant in his life that he had to be this bigger and larger than life person to be taken respectfully. In that way, you know, so it's just, there's just so many different things that, like, certain pieces that kind of come together. And I always try to figure out the reasons behind why people do the things that they do. And it brings me back to me feeling very sorry for the life that he had to endure that made him this way. And it's not taking him off the hook at all. Not at all, because, you know, when you get to be a certain point, you're responsible for the actions that you take. But you know what? If you've only been told that the devil was the best thing in the world, that is what you're only going to know. So you know what? He had been conditioned from a young age to be this person, because I saw it at 17. It wasn't like it started like later in life. It started early, and that was his survival.
That's really interesting. He'd been conditioned, operant conditioning. So again, I studied psychology, I love learning about the mind, you know, and I always said that there was no, it was a version of operant conditioning, but there was no punishment. It was all rewards. And, but maybe the punishment was, you know, how he was brought up and that the world was this and not that. And yeah, this is super interesting.
I figured that, like, bringing this perspective into it might have kind of caused a little bit. I'm not taking any bit of a side, but I feel as though I don't have anything to add to the con part of it. I just saw certain things that happened while we were together. I saw the way that he was. I saw, you know, I mean, for him, you know, being kicked out of his house for whatever reasons. I never heard the story as to why his stepdad, and from what I understand, his mom and dad were divorced, and his mom was remarried to a guy named, I think it was Ronald Isbald or something. They called him Izzy.
Islab.
Every time I've seen him, it was when maybe it was one or two times, he was always in the basement. Always. He was working on something. He never came up. He didn't talk to anybody. And I just thought that was very odd, very odd. And, you know, again, whatever. I mean, I'm not a judgmental person. I kind of take things for face value. But, you know, hindsight, it got me into thinking that there was definitely something wrong there. And why was at 17 was Rick Schulte. That's all I know of Dugo. Dugo is such a pseudoname for something that is him making himself like part of the mob or something. Like,
correct.
Ricky Schulte. That is all I know him as. Dugo is even really hard to even see. I don't know. So, I don't know. It's a different perspective.
No, I think it's great. You know, if you were to ask me, like, could I use some of this? Would I use some of this? I would. I would love to be able to tell your story. You know, again, I've reached out to Shannon Dugo. I've reached out to Renee Schulte, you know, to get backstories, to get their side of it. You know, like, I'm not looking.
I guarantee you she is so, I mean, like, if there was some sort, and again, not to use this, it's just a speculation. They were closer, too close to where there could have been maybe something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, she
will always be the one that will always support her brother regardless. I think she would go down. And again, this is so many years later, but what I felt from that time, she would have done anything for him.
And she still does. I mean, she literally bailed him out of jail. She literally today is supporting. Rick's current wife, Shannon, is getting money from Renee every month, even though Shannon has a job making $80,000 a year. I believe, you know, and again, this is all conjecture and kind of opinion and theory. Everybody's always asked me who's, you know, where's all the money? Everybody says like, oh, he's got no money. He's got no, he doesn't have two cents to rub together. I'm going to tell you something. He had no problem spending a couple hundred thousand dollars on his defense when he said, this is all lies. But that's why I have attorneys. One of his attorneys was from, you know, downtown Chicago, and he's $2,000 an hour just in, and he had two attorneys. You know, so he spent a couple hundred thousand dollars to get out of these charges. Everybody asks me, where's the money? I've always said, I believe his sister has it. Because again, when I look at some of these, the documents from the grand jury indictments, and I see that Renee has accepted checks from another guy, And it's, he's giving Renee, you know, this guy's giving Renee a check on behalf of Rick because Rick doesn't want it to show up in his bank account. But then she's laundering the money. You know, blood is thicker than water. So how much is she willing to do for him? That's the question, right? So I firmly believe that if anybody's holding on to like his go bag full of cash, it's her.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of stories. I guarantee you that she knows a lot. But you know what? I don't know if there's got to be some sort of hammer that comes down to put her in a position to either, you know, a plea thing saying, you know, you tell us what you know, or you're going to prison too.
Yeah, they pass. I mean, like, yeah, they.
There's no way that she can get away with being that middle person and not, you know, take any sort of blow from that. But.
Yeah, they passed on the opportunity. They weren't going to charge conspiracy, and the reason, like the whole thing, you know, there's a whole lot. But the whole conspiracy thing is very hard to prove in Illinois.
This just sucks. I mean, like, there's no justice whatsoever. I mean, it's plain and simple. What he did was wrong, and what she did was wrong, and people like turn their head the other way. It's unbelievable.
I don't disagree with you. I think there's many problems with the law in general, especially when it comes to white collar crime and theft and person to person, you know, fraud. It's nobody cares. And again, I'm not. This isn't a platform for any of that. But you know, maybe it is a platform to initiate change. You know that. You know, my wife and I were talking about what do I do next with this, right? Like, where does this go? And we started looking up like our state representatives that are in our area that I could write to and maybe, you know, get an interview to just try to ask them, how do I go about taking these things that I think are changes that have to happen when something is of a serial nature and you've got crimes that date back 30, 40 years that are all identical. They're just different people or different places or different times, but the scam is the same. Like,
right. Just listening to your podcast, listening to you now, you're very educated, you're very smart, you definitely have a very good speaking voice, but on top of that, I think you do have a very good story to tell, and I think the only way it's going to be probably looked at and considered, I mean, you've seen the Tinder swindler, right?
I've never watched, just to give you some background, while I'm dealing with all of the last 5 years, from 2018 on, after I know that I've been conned, I stopped watching anything that had to do with being swindled or conned. I was so enraged. And just seeing it again, it just stirred too much. And
It definitely triggers.
So it still triggers today. But no, so I'm just getting back into, I'm not to say that like I'm reemerging in society, but I mean, I turned the TV on last night and I was watching with my wife, like the story about John Gotti, and they're talking about all the words that I'm using in my podcast. I use emboldened, I use surreptitious, and I use all of these words. And I'm like, these guys are using my words. So,
It definitely sounds like it's still very fresh for you. I don't know the whole timeline of your story, but I do think you do have a good story. I think with anything, like a death of anything, it takes a while before you emerge. And when you emerge stronger. I think you are kind of on that line. I can feel it just from your podcast that I do think that you have a really good story to bring to a documentary or some sort of something for TV, and that is the only way people are going to stop and notice. I hate to say it, because anything else, it's just, you know what, in this day and age with what's going on in the world, everything is just kind of like brushed off. It's because we've become very numb, and unless you can actually visualize something, whether you use a whole different set of people's names, even a different name for Dugo, whatever, your story needs to get out there. I mean, there are people that are like this that other people cannot even believe that somebody can do this.
Yeah, I agree with you. So I'm, you know, I'm trying, I think, in the background. So something you brought up, like, you know, have I buried this? I buried this a long time ago. I buried this the day that he was found guilty in front of me. I buried all of this. What you hear from me is just passion. I'm very passionate about this. I always wanted to do something, write a book, write a story. I never thought I'd be in front of a microphone doing a podcast. Yeah, but, and I haven't. And so I set out to accomplish something. I had a short window because I was trying to time it with the Men's Health article that came out. So regardless, I'm on the other side. I'm in a really good place.
With you still being triggered, you definitely still have a little bit more, because when you can actually look at something and be like, you know what? Yeah, this is a different story and I can listen to it, is when you're fully healed or not.
Well, I think, here's the funny thing. I listened to my own podcast. My wife and I, we walk around our neighborhood and we listen to every episode. We've listened to every episode like 10 times. And this is before I publish them. And we're checking for errors and stuff like that. But what happens is that I totally lose track of time and space. When I'm listening, I don't even hear myself in the podcast. I'm enamored by the story. I imagine it like it's like not even me living that, you know, that piece of it.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, like the driving force, like I kind of feel like is this kind of wrapping up, like how much more am I going to be doing with it? You know, people are starting to come out of the woodwork like you. I mean, like this is great because it gives me a whole different perspective of some of the younger years. I attempted to get some of his background, but I just wasn't successful outside of what Dorothy Tucker had found out. And I get excited when people reach out. I get excited to hear stories. I get sad when I hear the stories. But I mean, I'm not I'm not like holding on to anything. I mean, I know I'm never going to get paid back. I know that the only way for me to ever pay myself back is to figure out a way to monetize this with and doing it with there's a word for it. Like, I want to do it the right way. I want to make sure that I protect everybody, that nobody's exposed. Yeah. I want to do it with like dignity and respect, and you know, whether it's changing names or whatever. But I obviously want people to know. I want if I have to be the poster child for the guy that got fucked over and conned, then so be it. Because the story is bigger than me. It's not. It's bigger than all of us. So,
well, I think you knowing who you are as a person, your mama did a great job raising you, because you know who you are, and you are at peace with that. Everything else is secondary, and that's the reason why you're able to pull yourself. But you're also, you told me you went through psychology and all that stuff. This is very intriguing, because this is all part of the psychology. Who would have thought that you would have been a part of a big story of what brings you passion? I know that sounds kind of weird, but it's true. I, you know what, the same thing with me. Psychology is one of my biggest things, and I probably became more of that person after I went through what I did with him.
For sure. So,
you know, it is fascinating. I continuously, to this day, I'm over it. I definitely, it's been under the rug, but you know what, to this day, I will use every bit of what I learned from him in this world. You know what I mean? And to help people understand it. So you have a really good thing. And again, like I said, I wouldn't have reached out had it not been for your podcast. So you're definitely doing something encouraging and right on the terms of trying to get your story out.
I appreciate that. I mean, it means a lot.
Somebody's virginity, you know, because of the guise of who he said he was, and was very believable, kind of a thing. And not to ever discredit that for a woman would be ever disregarded, because it's a big thing. I mean, that's a big thing. But it's on the flip side, you've got even just the big thing on the amounts of money that on the back end as he's gotten older. So I mean, there's like a point, like a start and a kind of finish as to what con can do to a person mentally, physically, emotionally. And it doesn't have to concern money, or it does concern money. You know what I mean? It can be emotional con. It could be, you know what I mean? So I think that is something, I guess, that I wanted to say. And also, as for a different perspective as to the reason why somebody can be so manipulative, and you know, like the upbringing, that is just not who you are as a person because of nothing. I mean, there's something that definitely deep-seated happened, in my opinion, that made him who he is today.
But you don't know what that is.
I don't, but like the little bits that I have, like his mom, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. Again, his mom was not a very warm person. So maybe, you know, if he's looking for that mommy thing, he didn't get it. You know, and then when he went to go turn to his dad was not around. His stepdad kicked him out of the house. I mean, he maybe survival of the fittest with being dyslexic. If that is all true, you know what I mean? He's had to learn to figure it out for himself and be that person that he always wanted to be in his Walter Mitty world. You know what I mean? Like his own made-up fictional world. And he somehow polished it to the point where he was able to do it successfully for so many years. I mean, there's a lot of psychology behind how this all came about. I don't know. I can't tell you that I know for certain what it is. I couldn't even say, but
well, it's very, I mean, like you just brought up Darwinism. You brought up social Darwinism, which I love, survival of the fittest. And, I'm a huge Darwin. Yeah. I always loved Darwin. I don't disagree with you, but I think it's like, how do I find out what that is? How do I find out what that event in time was? That was this defining moment for him that set him on this path, you know?
Oh, I mean, like, if that, the picture that you said, that John guy, I mean, was he from Chicago area? Like, if you showed me a picture of him and it was him, like, I don't know, you need to perhaps contact somebody that might have known him before I knew him, that knows a little bit more detail. I don't know if that Izzy, his stepdad, is still around or if he passed away. I don't know if there's relatives of that family, but I mean, there's something that was not right, and it was before me, for him to be where he was at 17 years old. So, yeah, I don't know, maybe reaching out to somebody from his younger days.
Yeah, maybe. Well, this has been fun. Yeah. This is really wild. And again, thanks a lot for the having the courage to reach out. Thanks for the support on the podcast.
I do applaud you for you having the courage to step forward and being the voice behind a lot of people that wish they could have done that. So, you know, kudos to you. And again, kudos to how you were raised to know your worth and know that, you know what, regardless, I'm still going to be who I am, and I'm going to make this be something that people should be aware of, not just in this case, but throughout life. Like, you don't just question things. So I give you a lot of kudos with that. Again, it was your strength behind your podcast of what I heard and how you handled the people that you had on there that made me trust in even telling you my name. So, you know what? I mean, you definitely have a good thing going.
Isn't it so fascinating to go back in time? Heading far back into 1984 was such an interesting treat. What a story. REM believes much of who Ricky Dugo is today is large in part because of how he was raised. There is a level of empathy that you hear, and we have to wonder, was there a significant deep-seated event that occurred when he was a child that turned him into the monster he has become today? We will have to continue to wonder. Coming up next, a very special two-part interview from one of the caregivers that worked for the Dugos in 2016. Let's head back to the Lake of the Ozarks next.